Hope everybody's doing okay today. The title of our lesson is Rock of Ages. This was a song written by August Toplady, or Toplady, I'm not sure. I think it would be Toplady. He lived in England from 1740 to 1778, so he only lived 38 years. I'm not sure what it was that what he died of. Didn't find out a whole lot about him other than that he got into it with John Wesley. John Wesley, as you know, was the, I guess you might say, the founder of the Wesleyan Church. And I didn't really understand all of the disagreements that they had, other than it had to do with my tone blank. That's not what they had disagreement against, but predestination, that's the word. Sonny will fill us in later, maybe, on this, because I have a feeling you know more about it than I do. But evidently the disagreement between August Toplady and John Wesley got rather bitter on Toplady's end, and John Wesley just eventually said, I'm not going to engage with him any longer, because it got it to a personal nature, apparently. But that really has nothing to do with our lesson today. Our lesson text comes from Matthew chapter 7, verses 15 through 29, and I'll read that at this time. And this is Jesus speaking. He says, "Beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Ye shall know them by the fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns, or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. Not every one that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? And in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works. And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And every one that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. And it came to pass, when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his doctrine. For he taught them as one having authority, and not as a scribe." We hear Jesus here speaking to this people, and he is describing to them the false prophets that will be around them. And he calls them, these men coming to them in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. They're coming to the people, and they're still coming to people today in sheep's clothing. That is, professing themselves to be Christians, coming to people and telling people, you know, I'm going to tell you about Christ. I'm going to describe to you what Christ said, and I'm going to tell you how to be saved. That's what these false prophets do. And they did it in the time of Christ, and they did it before Christ came. They are men that are influenced by Satan, doing everything they can to keep people separated from God. I don't necessarily say to separate people from God, because lost people are already separated from God, but they are doing what they can to keep people from hearing the truth. Now, one of the thoughts that came to my mind was about the preachers you see on television a lot of times. I don't watch much television preaching. Actually, I don't really watch any other than to tune into our own people occasionally. But, you know, as you flip through the channel sometimes, there'll be someone on, and you might stop for a minute and listen. I do occasionally. I don't sit there and watch them, but I'll listen to a few sentences they have to say. And a lot of times, they sound good. I mean, they sound genuine. They sound like they're describing, they're reading out of the Bible. They're reading out of the same Bible that I read out of, and they'll give you an interpretation of it that sounds pretty good. But the thing is, and I might not ought to say, I don't want to say too much about this, because as I said, I haven't listened to probably more than 15 minutes in my life, but I've never heard anyone in those 15 minutes speak about repentance, about turning to God and it being between the lost person and God, that you know, that repentance and the shed blood of Jesus Christ is the only way. I do hear occasionally about things that you need to do, whether it's you need to be baptized, you need to give to the poor, you need to send money into the preacher, and that seems to be a pretty big thing to donate to the cause there, that God might be pleased with you and He'll shine His light down upon you and you'll be blessed upon this earth. That seems to be a pretty big theme a lot of times, that you can gain worldly wealth and riches just by sending some money into this church, because this church is doing God's work, and if you help us out, well, God's going to be pleased, and He's going to bless you with all kinds of wealth and riches in these ages. And that right there lets us know that, for one thing, they're out after filthy lucre, because I believe that any person that is out truly spreading the gospel is not going to ask for money in any form or fashion. That would just be wrong. That would be wrong for me or you to do, to go up to a lost person and be trying to deliver the gospel to them, trying to tell them how the path of salvation and describing to them, you know, what it felt like when you got saved, what it felt like when you got lost, and then turn around and say, well, I could use a little bit of money to so I can carry this on to someone else and talk to them. When anyone does that to me, that destroys their credibility entirely. I don't have any confidence or faith in them at all when they bring up money from the lost to support the Lord's cause. It's my feeling and my thought that is entirely God's people's duty and responsibility to support God's cause, support the church, support the missions, whatever. We should never ask for outside donations from people. I just don't think that's right. I really got off subject there, and I didn't mean to. I didn't plan on doing that. But the thought I'm trying to get across there is that these people can appear to be very righteous. They can appear to be like they really have someone's interest in their heart, and that they want to be a Christian and deliver the word of God to people. But Jesus said here to beware of wolves in sheep's clothing. Beware of people that are only putting on the outward appearance, that inside they have an ulterior motive. Inside they have something else that they are after. And you might not be able to see that right off the bat. You may not pick up on it immediately. But if you follow somebody, if you watch their actions and their words and see what they're going about and doing it, you can determine what their inward motive is. You can determine where their heart lies, I believe. It may not be apparent the first minute or the first show or the first few times you see them, but people's lives bear fruit, as the Lord's saying here. You know, you can see the fruit. You can see how their lives are going. You can see what's really important to them. And another thing, you know, people can see what's important to us. The world watches us. They see us, and they see where our priorities are, and they see how we live our lives. Now, I don't believe that anybody sitting here today is a wolf in sheep's clothing. Don't get me wrong. But the truth is, the world is watching us. They are seeing how we behave ourselves, and we need to make it apparent and make it evident that we are resting our hope, our trust, and basing our lives upon this rock that I'm speaking of here today. That is Jesus Christ. Our lives need to be centered around Jesus Christ. And, you know, all our thoughts and our actions need to somehow or another go back to this principle. It was a phrase a few years ago, what would Jesus do? And that really got big, you know. It was on wristbands and caps. Just about every article of clothing had some kind of thing about what would Jesus do. Now, that's a good thought. That's what we as God's people ought to be thinking in our hearts and in our minds. How would Jesus approach these situations that we're faced with? Because we're faced with a lot of difficult things in our lives, particularly in this time that we're living in right now. And we ought to be asking ourselves, how would Jesus want me to handle this? And praying to the Lord, Lord, what do I do here? The theme is good. Now, it kind of got, muddied quite a bit, because it got to where it didn't mean anything. And that's the way phrases like that become, when they're just used carelessly and just used with a flippant attitude. They don't have much meaning after that. And so today, that's just kind of faded away. You don't see it much anymore, because it ran its course and people just got used to it, and it just didn't mean anything to them. But you know, we need to be careful about that. And this thought just came to my mind. We as God's people, we don't use the Lord's name in vain. I hope none of us do. And I don't mean just saying GD. I mean when you're out in public sometime and things go wrong and you just go, oh, shucks. Well, you know, that's not the time to use God's name. Not flippantly, not lightly, not just as an exclamation. Because when we do that, that turns it into just another "what would Jesus do" type phrase, and it loses its impact. When we use God's name, it ought to touch people. It ought to hit them. They ought to feel something when one of us speaks of Jesus or speaks of God or whatever. People need to see that it means something. There's something behind that. It's a real God. It's a living, powerful God. It's the rock that we base everything upon. I want to go just for a second here to Isaiah 63 and read two verses here. Now, this was almost 700 years before the time of Christ. And it says in 63 verse 1, "Who is this that cometh from Edom with dyed garments from Bozrah, that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength, I that speak in righteousness, mighty to save? Wherefore art thou red in thine apparel, and thy garments like him that treadeth in the wine fat?" And then he says in the third verse, "I have trodden the winepress alone, and of the people there was none with me. I will tread them in mine anger and trample them in my fury, and their blood shall be sprinkled with my garments, and will stain all my raiment." I believe he's talking about people here. He's asking, where did the red come from in thine apparel and thy garments? Why do your garments appear to be the way they are? I believe he's speaking of these people, these false prophets here that are clothed in sheep's clothing. They're clothed in Christianity, or they're clothed in what they give the appearance of being godly. But he says, "I've trodden the winepress alone." The Lord is sovereign. There is none equal to him. There is none that is standing up there next to God, Jesus, negotiating for anyone. There is one of the other religions, you know, that they pray to Mary quite a bit, and they're thinking, I guess, there is that Jesus wouldn't turn his own mother down, and so they have this tier, if you will, where there's the Father, and then there's someone above that, and then there's Mary, and then there's Jesus, and there's God. But that's not the way it is, and we know that. And y'all that read the New Testament we'll see that Jesus didn't refer to Mary as mother, I think maybe one time. And I mean, he didn't, and I believe that was purposeful to keep people from moving Mary up to a higher position than what she ought to have been, to keep people from worshiping her, because that's what it turns out to be. Anyone that prays to Mary or asks Mary for any kind of help, they're worshiping Mary, whether they want to admit that or not. But we see here in Isaiah that Isaiah is prophesying, and I believe this was occurring at the time when he was there, but he's also prophesying of things to come about people who take the Lord's name and they want to show forth that they're doing God's work, but they're not standing upon the rock. They're not trusting in Jesus. They're not speaking truly about Jesus. They may use his name, and they may take bits and pieces of the Bible and put that forth as supporting what they believe, but there will always be something else added in. There will be something mixed in, and that's where we have to watch out, not to allow things to creep into our churches, not to allow things to works to creep in. Now, that's kind of a difficult thing for me sometimes, because I say that there's a fine line there. There's also we want to be careful and not become as the Jews did, so entrenched in tradition and ritual that and saying, oh well, we're not going to go after this modern thing here, and we don't want to go after it to change things, but we also don't want to just be in such a habit that we, and I've said this in the past and others have said it in the past, we meet here, sing two songs, have a Sunday school lesson, sing a few more songs, have preaching, and dismiss. The Lord needs to be in our services. He needs to be directing our services. We're talking about the Rock of Ages here. We're talking about Jesus Christ. He's the one that ought to be letting us know what we need to do. And if he doesn't want us to conduct our services the way we have for the last however many years, if he directs us someday to meet out in the parking lot or to meet out in Kroger's parking lot or one of the parks or whatever and pray, I'm trying to get across the point that Jesus may have things for us to do that will touch people in some manner, and we don't need to stand up and say, oh well, that's not the way it is. We need to be here in this church because that's the way we've always done it. It's kind of a fine line there between embracing some newfangled thing and being stuck in the traditions and only doing it because that's the way we've always done it in the past. You know, in the past, things were done that were wrong, and we don't want to cling to those things. The only way we can get it right is if we're led by God. If we're led by the Spirit of the Lord and we follow His Spirit, then it'll be right. Then it'll be pleasing. But we have to be drawn near to Him. We have to be a humble, contrite people. And we have to be truly trusting in Him and looking out for what He would have us to do. I want to go now back to Deuteronomy in chapter 32. Chapter 32, 15 and 16 here. But Jeshurun waxed fat and kicked. Thou art waxing fat, thou art grown thick, thou art covered with fatness. Then he forsook God which made him, and lightly esteemed the rock of his salvation. They provoked him to jealousy with strange gods, with abominations provoked they him to anger. And we're speaking here of God's people, of children of Israel here. God blessed them. They waxed fat. They grew wealthy. They grew content. They had an easy life. And when they were covered with that ease and that fatness, then he forsook God which made him. Israel turned their back upon God, and they lightly esteemed the rock of his salvation. They just took it for granted. They didn't really think it was that big a deal. They didn't realize what they had. To me, that kind of reminds me of myself a lot. I take it for granted. I really do. You know, it says here, lightly esteemed the rock of his salvation. I don't keep in mind what the Lord did for me, the suffering that he did. It just kind of, and it's easy to do, it just kind of drifts back to the back of my mind, and I get caught up in the things that I'm doing on a day-to-day basis. When it comes to my mind, well, I'm busy. I've got to get up and get going. I've got to be somewhere. I've got to do something. There's always a reason to just push it back and to lightly esteem it. There's always a reason to do that. But it's not acceptable to God. That reason is not going to stand. God's not going to look down. The Lord's not going to look down and say, well, yeah, I understand. You had to get up and go to work. You had to do this. You had to do that. It's all right. That's not all right. It's not going to get a pass, because it says here in the 16th verse, they provoked him to jealousy with strange gods. Now, the children of Israel took after the gods that were in the land, but there is no difference for God's people today to set their hearts upon things upon this earth, whether it's sports or money or cars or clothes, whatever. When we do that, that is a strange god. That is a false god, and it's an abomination. And it says it provoked him to anger. Going on down here into the 22nd verse, and this is going back to the false prophets. It says, many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works? I do believe that there are a lot of people that are going to stand before God, and they're going to go through this life thinking that they're doing something right. They're going to go through this life believing that the things they're doing are pleasing unto God. They're living their life, and they're doing the very best they can, and they're trying to avoid sin as much as possible. And they're going to die thinking that that's going to be enough, because they're not ever going to understand that the works of man are as filthy rags, that we can't live our life good enough to get into heaven. They're going to die thinking that, well, hopefully I live my life good enough to get into heaven. Now, I don't believe that they're going to be deceived once their soul has left their body. I believe that that veil, that darkness, is going to be removed immediately. And when they stand before the Lord, they're already going to know what's gone wrong. They're going to understand before the Lord ever speaks a word to them, because they're going to see him in his righteousness. They're going to see him in his perfection. And they're also going to see their self the way they really are. They're going to see their shortcomings and their failures, but it's going to be too late. So when he says, I never knew you, depart me from ye that work iniquity, they're already going to know that's coming. They're going to understand that. It won't be a surprise. But they're going through this life, and they're basing their actions and their hopes and everything, and they're, the Bible's they're trying to live their lives in a manner that'll get them into heaven. We know that's not going to work. It's our duty to pray to the Lord to show us who it is we speak to, because there's some people that you can't go up to them. I mean, they've got their mind made up, and the Bible teaches us not to cast our pearls before swine. I think there's, you know, the Lord's working on people. He's preparing them, and he needs one of us to be prepared to speak with him, and he'll bring us together when the time is right. But that's where we as God's people, again, need to be led by his Spirit. And I really can't stress that enough. You know, if we're to survive as a church, as a true and living church, it'll only be by the Spirit of the Lord, by him being here, guiding us and directing us. And if we don't have that, then nothing we do or any direction we take is going to be wrong if the Spirit of the Lord's not in it. He goes on here then in the 25th verse, and it says, and the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. This rain and this flood and the winds, you know, that's symbolic of troubles and heartaches and sorrows that we encounter in our lives and temptations and trials that come along. And those of us that have been saved, we're standing upon that rock, and those things are not going to get us down. Now, we will have heartache. I mean, we're going to have sorrow. Don't get me wrong on that. But the Lord's going to see us through. He's going to be there to comfort us and to help us through those hard times. And we're going to come out all right. You know, I may lose my life. I don't know what the future holds. There it may come some kind of hard time, and this country may outlaw worship as we have it today and start putting us to death again the way that it was in the Middle Ages. I just don't know. But it was okay for those people that got put to death. You know, they only lost their lives. Their soul was all right, and I believe they had a great reward in heaven for that, for what they endured upon this, that in this short life that they lived upon this earth, they have a great reward for the heartaches and the troubles that they saw. The Lord has been there for them. But then you go on and you read, everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand, and the rain descended, and the floods came, and the houses winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. Great is the fall of a lost sinner when he dies, because there is no redemption at that point. There is no there's no redos, no second chances, and that's it's a terrible thing, and it's something that needs to bother us. It needs to disturb us. We need to understand where it says, "And great was the fall." It's a horrible thing. It's a tremendous thing. It's, again, that's not something to esteem lightly either. That's not something to just say, well, it's a shame. He died without the Lord, man. That's just too bad. That's not the way to look at that. It's a horrible thing. It's a sorrowful thing, and it's something that really needs to bother us when we hear about somebody that died and didn't leave a testimony of salvation. It should really get to us, and if we're in the right place, it will disturb us. It'll spur us on to try to serve God, to try to reach out and keep that from happening for somebody else. But if we're just lightly esteeming these things as they did in the Old Testament, then it's really not going to bother us too much. I guess I'm about done. Does anybody have any thoughts, any questions? I appreciate y'all showing up today and your attention. I hope you got something from this lesson. I kind of strayed off with the title there, The Rock of Ages. But I believe everybody here knows that Jesus is the rock and that he's going to endure. He's going to endure throughout this while time is, and throughout all eternity, and us that have been saved are going to endure with him. Our souls are going to live on. One thought did cross my mind as I was studying about this. You know, y'all are all familiar with rocks. I'm sure you've got some on your property, more than likely. If you've got more than a few square feet in Tennessee, you've got a rock somewhere. And rocks don't change. They're there. I can go back to his house and find rocks that's there when I was a kid, and they look just the same now as they did then. They're just as solid, and they're, you know, they're just there. And I think that God made rocks like that to show us something, that we can look at that and we can think of Jesus. I think God made everything that somehow or another it points to the Lord. It's some kind of symbol. That might sound kind of crazy, but I believe everything in this world somehow or another gives God honor and glory. And rocks get in the way sometimes when you want to do something. But you know, a lot of times when you want to do something in this world, the Lord's there telling you you're going the wrong way. He's trying to get in your way. And you can turn that aside if you want to, but it's not going to work out well.
There's one thing that goes on in this world. Some people think Peter was a rock. On his shirt's a little bit of Peter, but that ain't right.
I believe that should have been interpreted a stone.
Yeah, so. Petra.
Petra, yes. Anybody else have anything? If not, we can be dismissed. And let's keep Brother Armour in our prayers. The Lord might help him physically get over his cold and help him spiritually as he tries to stand to deliver the word. I'll ask Brother Quinn if he would to dismiss us.
Heavenly Father, we thank thee. This is not about you.